This is Seattle's Morning News. Joe Cirincione is the president of the Plowshares Fund, which means it is his job to make sure that the world doesn't blow up. And Joe, I wanted to ask you about the president's decision to call out the president of Iran at the United Nations. You actually talked with Hassan Rouhani, the president of Iran. What was his reaction to our president's remarks?
Well, I met with him before the president talked. This is probably the fourth time I've met President Rouhani. I expected him to be angry. I expected some blistering rhetoric. It had just been a few months since the president had withdrawn from the Iran anti-nuclear deal. But instead, he was fairly sober, fairly calm about all this. And as we talked, it became clear that he felt that Iran was in the catbird seat, as
really?
They say, that they had benefited from this. I asked him directly whether he thought the Iran deal could survive the U.S. withdrawal, and he said, yes, it could, as long as Europe and Russia and China, who are the other partners in this agreement, kept their obligations, that is, kept doing business with Iran, then Iran would continue to abide by the restraints.
When you spoke with Rouhani, does he ever explain why he supports terrorist organizations?
Absolutely, we bring that up, as well as the issue of Americans that are held in Iranian prisons. You know, it's particularly Iranian Americans that have gone back in recent years and been arrested and being held completely unjustifiably in Iranian prisons. We do bring that up. And what you realize is this is the kind of thing that you have to deal with a lot of countries in the region. You know, whereas Iran, for example, has aided the Assad regime in Syria to kill hundreds of thousands of Syrians, Saudi Arabia is engaged right now in a three-year war with Yemen, where it's right. killed about 200,000 Yemeni civilians. So, and Saudi Arabia is also a theocracy, also a country that summarily executes political prisoners, oppresses women. So you realize you have to deal in the Middle East with a host of countries that are very similar to Iran. So that it is a generic problem that you have. It's not that Iran is uniquely evil. And that's what's so disturbing about the Trump administration policy right now. I see them trying to follow the Iraq war playbook, cherry pick intelligence, inflate the threat, link the regime to terrorists like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, even though we know there's no connection between the two, and drive towards a policy of coercion and regime change.
You think we're going to really send troops into Iran or bomb Iran?
Last week, National Security Advisor John Bolton quietly expanded the role of the U.S. combat forces in Syria. Remember, they were set there to fight ISIS. And he said they're not going to leave as long as Iran is there. So he's expanding the mission of U.S. combat forces to counter Iran. This would bring U.S. forces in a close proximity to Iranian Revolutionary Guard forces, which are in Iranian territory. Just yesterday, both John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke at an anti-Iran group dedicated to the regime change in Iran, pledging their support for these kinds of actions, talking in very bellicose terms. So yes, I think the threats are escalating, the rhetoric is escalating, the missions are changing. And I'm worried that intentionally or unintentionally, we could be dragged into a war with Iran, even if the president himself may not want this. He may think of this as tough talk, as a way to get them to the negotiating table. But there are people in his administration and people in the region who, no kidding around, do want to go to war with Iran. Saudi Arabia sees this as a chance to settle scores with the Persian Shia heretics that they've had a religious conflict with for hundreds of years, millennia, in fact. And it's very possible that this rhetoric and the close proximity that U.S. and Iranian forces operate in now in the Persian Gulf, in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, could lead to an incident that could escalate into a war, or that could be used as an excuse for U.S. taking military action, particularly, and this is the final piece of it, as the president's domestic troubles mount, he may be tempted to wag the dog, to create an international crisis that he believes will rally the American public around him. That's why some members of Congress are introducing legislation led by Senator Udall of New Mexico to prevent the administration from declaring war on Iran, that this is a matter, they say, that should be taken up by the U.S. Congress. So it's not just me that's worried. There are mounting concerns in the region with our allies and here in Washington that the path the president has put us on could trigger a new catastrophic war in the Middle East.
Well, Trump declared that the war in Iraq was, I believe, it's the dumbest decision we ever made, which we're still paying for. And he'd do it again in Iran. I hope if that happens, at least this time they have a government prepared and ready to go to take over.
It's one of the contradictions of the Trump presidency. I mean, I really do believe that he doesn't want to do this. You see the way he's been dealing with North Korea.
Right.
Last year, North Korea was the subject of his ire at the UN, and I think he believes that successfully worked and convinced Kim Jong-un to come to the negotiating table. He now calls him a friend. He may actually think that this kind of strategy that has worked in New Jersey construction projects might work with Iran. If so, he's sadly mistaken, and the Iranians are very clear on this, and that is one of the senses you get when you talk to the president of Iran, when you talk to Rouhani. You know, it's not that he's a saint. It's not that he should be getting the Nobel Peace Prize. It's just that you see these people represent a society that's existed for three millennia. Right. They used to be the Persian Empire. They see themselves as naturally a dominant power in the region and not somebody that's going to be bullied around. And you get the sense of their patience, that they're not in a rush. They don't feel panicked about this. They have economic problems now, no question about it. Their currency, the rial, just hit an all-time low yesterday, partially as a result of the sanctions, the cut in oil exports from Iran that are resulting from the U.S. actions. But they've been there before, and they think they could survive this. They see oil prices going up around the world. It just hit $80 a barrel. Yesterday, that's going to have an impact on Western economies, our economies, our fuel prices, our gas prices, and they think they can wait this out. They're not in a rush, and they think they can, that they were there before Donald Trump, and they'll be there after Donald Trump. I think our job is to try to keep things calm enough so that we don't unintentionally slip into a war that perhaps neither side truly wants.
Joe Cirincione, who is the president of the Plowshares Fund. Joe, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
Time for the Sports Insider, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealer. And here he is, plucked from the confines of 710 ESPN Seattle and plucked and plopped into foreign territory here at Cairo FM. And Danny O'Neill is here to give you the things you can credibly say before the game starts to show you know what's about to happen.
I need that.
So predict for us what's going to happen on Sunday.
The key for the Seahawks is to stop David Johnson.
Stop David Johnson.
It's the Cardinals running back. He is the best player on the Cardinals offense, and the Cardinals offense is awful. They scored 20 points in three games, fewest of any team in the league.
That is terrible.
And they're going to be starting a rookie quarterback named Josh Rosen, who has developed a little bit of a reputation in his college tenure at UCLA for being a millennial, for wanting to know why. That was what his coach there said. Josh is part of a generation. They want to know why. They want to know why. You have to explain why to them. You have to explain why.
So, as in, why did you call that play?
Yeah, or why are we running this play in this specific way? I don't understand. I need it explained to me, because if I don't see the point of it, I'm not going to do it.
Well, I'm not going to beat up on millennials during my sports garbage talk, but...
Well, it's always fun. They're generally a pretty good target.
Hey.
They have a low divorce rate.
Yeah.
That's good.
They got that going for them. Yeah.
We brought you Instagram.
So, you go up against a team with a terrible defense and a cynical, skeptical green behind the wet behind the ears quarterback.
Inexperienced quarterback. How's that? Does that one work okay? That's not taking a gratuitous shot at a millennial, is it?
There you go.
Yeah. He's inexperienced. And their defense.
An inquisitive quarterback.
Yeah, their defense. You want to make him wonder, why did I choose this profession? Why? Why did I choose this as my said desired vocation to fill in this world? Yeah. They really, I mean, Seattle, David Johnson is the Cardinals' best player. And if they can hand it to him 25 times in the game and control the clock and continue to gain first downs, they're going to do that.
But they're winless.
Yes.
Do we really need to stop him if the Cardinals are winless?
Yes, because if he runs the ball 30 times, it's probably a sign that they are successful in running it. And there's very little risk. There's much less risk in handing the ball off compared to throwing it. You want to put a team in it. They call it being one-dimensional. Mm. You want to make them an opponent one-dimensional because if they can't run the ball, then they have to throw it. And in this case, it's a quarterback who is the biggest question mark on their team. Mm. And also, when you know he has to throw it, then you can do what the defense calls pin your ears back. You want, as a defense, you always want to be able to pin your ears back. And that means that you just go after the quarterback. You don't even worry about the run because you're not concerned about them handing the ball off. You can pin your ears back and go after the quarterback.
Isn't it also true that there's nothing more dangerous than a winless team? For two reasons. You go in there with too much confidence, and the team itself has something to prove. The other team has something to prove by beating you.
Those are two things people will say. Here's something that I will say. It's also possible when you play a winless team that they're trash, and that the reason that they're winless is because they're not very good.
Oh.
And that if you should treat them like trash and crumple them up and throw them into the landfill bin, not the compost, not the recycling, put them in the trash.
Does it always have to be violent with you?
Yeah, well, I just want to make the point. You've got to pin your
game.
And if you pin your ears back as you ball them up and put them into the trash, it'll be even more satisfying.
Where are you putting the Seahawks' chances against the Cardinals?
68%.
Not bad.
Yeah.
It'll be an exciting game then.
It's on the road. They're 2-12 on the road in September under Pete Carroll. However, this will be the final day of September, which means it's almost October, and they're significantly better on the road in October. So maybe there'll be more October road Seahawks than September road Seahawks. It's always tough to win on the road.
We can always hope.
But the Seahawks are favored by 3.
And Earl Thomas was at practice, right?
Earl Thomas practiced.
So that's good.
Yes, it is.
Huh.
He got out there.
All right. Is Doug Baldwin back?
Doug Baldwin sounds like he's back. He practiced
really?
The past 2 days.
He
looks good. Looks like he's returning. No KJ Wright, though. Don't have any KJ Wright
What
yet.
Happened to KJ Wright?
He had knee surgery before the season started, and it sounds like he had a bit of a setback, so he hasn't played yet this year. But you get Doug Baldwin. You've got Bobby Wagner. We've got Michael Kendricks,
so
the inside trading wolf of Wall Street, who's been really good.
What was the stock?
I don't know. I wondered the same thing. I think it was 4 different transactions.
Really?
Yeah.
Are we going to see the new faster Russell? I mean, faster to pass, faster to get rid of the ball, Russell Wilson?
He was last week.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of throws which are as good as any throw you'll see a quarterback make.
Is there a term for that when you get rid of the ball fast?
Just decisive.
Decisive.
Yeah.
So we're going to see the decisive Russell Wilson.
Yeah, he's able to drop back
no
into
more
the pocket
scrambled
and just get it. He gets rid of the ball fast. He's getting rid of it fast.
And the Seahawks are going to stop David Johnson making the Cardinals a one-dimensional team, bringing a victory.
And then what do they do?
Very good.
What do they do when they make them one-dimensional, Colleen?
Really intense.
They pin their ears back. That's correct.
Yes.
You want to get to where you pin your ears back.
Focus on the quarterback, that stinking millennial who's always asking why.
Plus,
there we go.
Earl Thomas practiced, and he's going to bring it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Very good.
You guys feel prepared?
I do.
So good, Dave.
Go Seahawks.
The Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Family members of the 51-year-old grandmother killed by a stray bullet in a gang shooting last week are opening up about their loss. And Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott was there when her 2 sons spoke in Buren yesterday. That city's mayor also vowed to send a message. And Hannah's here now.
Gabriela Reyes Dominguez's youngest son, Gabriel, described his mother as a woman full of love, a best friend to everyone, who had to overcome a lot of obstacles in her life, but was driven by her faith.
And one thing she would want everyone to carry on is that faith, you know, the faith that God gave her, and that, you know, we can help this community and that we will be able to move on.
His older brother, Jesus, talked about how much he loved his mom and how important she was to the community.
I went to the candlelit vigil, and a lot of people in the community came up to me telling me Your mom saved me. When I needed help, she was there. When I needed someone to talk to, she didn't judge. She was just there to listen.
And referencing the ongoing gang war blamed for his mother's death.
It's scary what's happening in the community. But all I can ask is people take what she brought to this world, which is love, unconditional love for no reason, and having an open heart, never judging.
Burien Mayor Jimmy Mata, who had known their mother for 20 years, agreed Gabriella would have forgiven the teens accused in her death because of her strong feelings about helping misguided kids and forgiveness. He's working to boost the effort in Burien and lobby for more funding for prevention programs to help steer kids away from gangs. But Mata says enforcement also needs to be a part of this. In the week since Gabriella was killed, he has stepped up gang emphasis patrols to discourage retaliatory shootings and to help the locals feel safer. And Mata says Burien police will also be a part of the new regional gang task force the King County Sheriff's Office hopes to start to lead, with money included in Dale Constantine's budget proposal.
I'm also asking the county executive, it's only two positions. I'd like to see more positions funded with the gang task force. One life is too much. I'm also asking the governor to speak up on this gang and gun violence throughout our state. Burien is not unique.
Mata says communities all over the state, from the east side of the Cascades to the South Sound, Everett and beyond, are being plagued by gangs, and there needs to be a response at all levels, including from Olympia. He has this message for gangs in his city.
We will not tolerate gang and gun violence in Burien. Send a message to our youngsters. There is no life in being in a gang. The only life you will find is a cemetery or a prison. These young people who were 17 who decided to pull the trigger are going to be spending some hard time for their actions. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? The life of a grandmother, the life of a mother was taken for no reason.
So what happens? You've got three teenagers in custody now. What happens to
them? There are three teenagers in custody. One is the suspected driver. He is charged as an adult with second-degree murder, and he's just sitting in jail right now. The second is the suspected shooter. He's not been charged yet, but he had a prior domestic violence charge against him. He is now being held on an emergency motion in that case, pending any charges in this case. The third pled guilty yesterday. That's a 17-year-old who was suspected of rendering criminal assistance. He's only been charged with possession of a firearm at this point, and he pled not guilty yesterday. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. I found out yesterday this kid, this 17-year-old who was suspected of hiding the gun, had been charged with possession, as we'd spoken about before, and convicted of possession of a firearm at least once or twice before. Now, under our state law, sentencing guidelines for kids busted with guns, whether they're gang members or not, the sentencing guideline is 0 to 30 days until your fifth conviction of possession of a firearm. But there is such a thing. It's called manifest injustice, where if the prosecutors feel like, look, this is just not working, this kid is violent, and our 0 to 30 days we've done the last two times hasn't been working on him, they can ask for something stricter. They did that in this kid's case. This kid accused of hiding the gun on his last conviction was a little over a year or so ago. They asked for 52 weeks. He got 52 weeks. He served 52 weeks.
Has any of them said what was going through their minds?
The kids?
Yeah.
They're not talking.
So they're not talking.
No.
Wow. All right, Hannah, thank you.
You bet.